And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. This is Martin Willis, your host. And first of all, I would like to apologize for last week. It was Murphy's Law kicking in every which way. We had high winds, and on Dark Matter Radio, we had a fried hard drive. It was a comedy of errors. And so we don't want that to happen again. And this week, in hour one, and also helping me out with the news, is Chip Reichenthal. That's right. I said helping me out with the news. And guess what? Alejandro Rojas somehow forgot to tell me he was on vacation this week. So I'm going to be doing the news, and Chip's going to help me. And I refuse to let Murphy and his laws affect the show this week. So Chip will be on later, actually, through hour one, and he's going to be talking about hypnosis of abductees. He's going to be talking about his first or his UFO sighting. And this is an interesting topic we're going to bring up, ETs versus ghosts, which will be proven first. And it's funny, I'm going to talk to him about someone that was in my office today talking about ghosts. It was kind of interesting. So in hour two, we have something really kind of exciting. It's a first-time speaker, Rob Mercer. And Rob is in Ohio, MUFON. And he also was he happened to be on Craigslist a while back. And he saw something that was interesting, and he went and checked it out, and it was Project Blue Book files. So he found out that who the person was, where they originated from, contacted him. The gentleman is still alive. He's, I believe, in his 80s. And he got all kinds of great Project Blue Book stuff that we're going to talk about. It's pretty exciting. So it's kind of like breaking news, and that's an hour two. So I want to thank everyone for their support. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want to hear the full show for only a dollar or more a month, that's just 23 cents a week. And I bought a Starbucks latte the other day, and it was like five something. And I was thinking, wow, someone can listen for 5 months for this one coffee. Anyway, if you'd like to do the support, you can go to our website, podcastufo.com, and just click on the support link right on the sidebar. And if you can't support us, thank you for listening anyway. We appreciate every single one of you. Don't forget, we have two T-shirts on our website. We're practically giving them away. Matter of fact, if you just give me an offer, I'll probably send you one as long as postage is covered. Now, next week, we are going to do shout-outs for people that support us for $5 or more a month. So if you want me to use your full name, please do email me this week if you hear the show. It's at martinet@podcastufo.com. And we are ready to bring in Chip and to do the news. Chip, how are you?
I'm great, Martin. You know, I always enjoy being with you, and I sure love the show here. And I have to find a sexier name so I can keep up with, you know, Alejandro as far as doing the news goes. But great to be here. Thank you.
You can Latinize your name somehow. We'll have to work on that.
Well, then it would be cheap, and that just doesn't cut it, you know?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say, as far as the news goes, all the links are right on our show notes at podcastufo.com, and they're all from, they all originate at openminds.tv. And we're going to start out, Pennsylvania UFO described as Star Trek shimmery. Now, this guy sounds like a real observer here. He was out walking his dog, and he had a satellite app on his phone, and he was looking at satellites, spotting them. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of his eye, he sees a like a black triangle. And then he it was like a flying V across the southwest to the northwest. And he gives all this really detailed information about holding his thumb up in front of his eye and trying to see how big the thing was. He guesses approximately how big, how fast it was going. Anyway, that story's right on our website, the link to it. And what do you think? Did you read that, Chip?
Yeah, I did, Martin. And, you know, I think a lot about this, especially in Pennsylvania, Lancaster County. And I'm mainly known as a paranormal guy, but I'm very tied into the UFO community. They're MUFON level 5, which means that there's more sightings in Pennsylvania and around that area, Lancaster County area, than just about any other state in the country. You know, 9 sightings alone in February. So it says a lot. You know, it ties into something, and admittedly, I'm a little sentimental today at that plane crash in the French Alps. You know, you see world leaders hugging each other and crying, and that I can't help but be affected by that. But there's something that ties into this story, and I'll be brief about it. But again, in southern France, there was a guy who works with helicopters and quadricopters that builds these Star Trek-like flying devices. And one is triangular-shaped. It's got LED lights on it. He's been very proud of it. This guy has been creating stuff in the south of France for a long time now, you know, kind of like some of the guys we brought in from Germany back in the 40s to, you know, help us out with rocket propulsion and things of that nature. And it looks very much similar to what this guy described. So it could be something, you know, explainable here, but it also could be something else, because in Pennsylvania, they've got Bigfoot, they've got this dog man, you know, lots of UFOs. So I think MUFON level 5, so there could be something to it.
Yeah, you do. You're right. You hear all kinds of things about Pennsylvania, and Bigfoot is no stranger there for sure. So secondly, I'd like to talk about the SETI just had an upgrade. And I think it's kind of funny if anyone is supporting the show and they went in to look on our on Get Joyride, they saw that I posted a debate with Seth Shostak from SETI. I posted it last week. It's still up there. If anyone is supporting the show, they can listen. And it's a UFO debate. And I talked to him about sort of about this. Now they have this new on the radio telescopes. They're doing an infrared thing. It's an upgrade from just the radio waves. And that's one of the questions I asked him. I said, isn't that kind of primitive? You know, if you're thinking civilizations are real advanced, way advanced of us, and you're looking for them in radio waves. And he said, well, you know, basically he said, and I thought he actually had a good point. He said that, well, it's better than doing nothing. We're just exploring with what we know. And so I have to agree. It was really hard to agree with that point, but I did agree with that point. But, and Frank Drake, God, he's like 84 years old or something. And I don't really agree that much with the Drake equation and all that, but he is a pioneer of SETI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you familiar with SETI at all there, Chip?
I am. And, you know, I got to be honest here, because I like that they're thinking infrared. But this guy started with radio. And if radio waves are moving at the speed of light, then we've only hit what? Like maybe 60 light years. I mean, we're in the asteroid belt, maybe. So it'll take a while, really, before we could reach a civilization that hears about radio, you know. But these guys are more astronomers than Frank Drake is, you know. He's working with microwaves. They're working with infrared. And from, I don't know, my experience, astronomers seem to be kind of non-believers, you know. They see what they see, and they don't see any evidence of life elsewhere, even though they're really looking for it. And, look, there's a lot of possibilities on the moons and Jupiter and Saturn where they're seeing possibilities of water very similar to what we have. And there could be maybe microbial life, maybe even oceanic life.
There was something this week just discovered on Mars. I don't know if you read that.
Oh yeah, with the soil samples. They kind of, this is where kind of like this week as opposed to last week, where they're really making lemonade out of lemons. Something leaked into their samples, but it turns out that they found 2% water, which means there once was water there and could even be something underground. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. It seems like, you know, if they're looking at the theory of panspermia, where we originated from somewhere else, like an asteroid or something of the sort, it could have been Mars.
Absolutely. Okay, we're ready to move on to the last story. And it's a MOD, Ministry of Defense, helicopter chases four UFOs in England. This family was outdoors enjoying a barbecue, and all of a sudden they heard a helicopter, and they looked, and it was chasing UFOs through the sky. Now, the woman told her husband, or told her son, I guess, to run and get the camera. So he came back, and it was just a regular camera, nothing special, didn't have a zoom or anything. And they snapped a couple of photos. So if you look at, we have a picture right on our show notes or on our homepage on podcastufo.com. And it looks just like what you would think of as a Maury Island sighting, which was actually before Roswell back in 1947. They said they had these donut-shaped UFOs that were flying over, and one of them started having trouble and started spilling like this lava stuff off of it and landed on the boat, killed the dog, injured the boy, all that stuff. Anyway, if you look at this picture, it's definitely one of those donut-shaped UFOs, and they're back. Did you look at it?
I did, and look, it's funny because if you look around the world, there are many countries that take UFO sightings and extraterrestrials much more seriously than we do, and they're really out over it much more than the United States and England. I mean, those are the two places that seems to be the most reserved as far as admitting anything. It's a miracle we got Project Blue Book, you know, which will, something we'll talk about in the ghost versus UFOs things later on in the hour. I take it very seriously, this one, especially because things seem to come back to areas like England and Ireland, you know, and maybe it's something from ancient times, but it just seems like things tend to show up there that haven't shown up there in a long time. And, you know, the English, they don't really speak out much about this sort of thing, so there has to be something to this one, I think.
I remember, I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. His name was Simon something. I interviewed him in England. He was in an area of England that with really bad weather, and I said, have you ever had a sighting? He goes, no, I never even see the sky.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So, hey, well, you know, that's it for the news this week. And take that, Alejandro Rojas. We did it. So, hey, thanks, Chip, for helping me out there. And let's get started with you, because a number of my listeners have not a clue who you are. So why don't you go ahead and give your background?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually more known for a paranormal guy, but I'm very tied into ufology and extraterrestrials. I have a lot of friends who have been either what they call experiencers, which means they had either benign or positive experiences with what they consider to be extraterrestrial beings and abductees. And I'm also certified as a hypnotherapist. So I'm familiar with some of the hypnosis techniques that they use to talk to abductees, but I'm probably best known as a radio host, including a time here, a very honored time, on Dark Matter, on a show called Keeping the Spirits Alive, where I was co-host with my buddy John Tobin. I had opening editorials called Chipisms. I have a book published that is more of a paranormal thing. It's called Even the Dead Won't Tell You the Truth. It's kind of a murder mystery that is from the point of view of somebody who talks to dead people. So, and you got some first-person perspective there. But I've also written a couple of science fiction books. And so I've done a lot of research on extraterrestrials and ufology and some of the deeper stuff that, you know, most people don't get to see. But, yeah, I'm currently hosting a show on the A1B radio network called Beyond the Norm, where we talk about all aspects of paranormal and metaphysical and ufology.
Wow, great. Wow. It's great to have you on. I've always enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, likewise. Yeah. It's an honor. Thank you.
And let's we were going to talk this week. I'm trying to remember what the subjects were. One of them was you had a sighting, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I did. A couple of them, actually. And the one I didn't mention to you may be more profound than the first one. But the first one, when I was 10 years old, I was with my best friend growing up. We were having an argument, which was very rare because we got along really well. And all of a sudden, we saw this thing up in the sky, and it was very close to us. I'm kind of old, so when I was 10, there's a show called Lost in Space on TV, and they had a spaceship
that looked. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, good.
Hey, Philly Mummy and I talk on Facebook now and then.
No kidding. Oh.
Yeah.
I everybody thought I looked like him. I was like a kind of a twin of his. So that's, wow.
Yeah.
Small world. Please send him my love next time you talk to him.
Oh, he's been ignoring me because I invited him on this show, so he decided to ignore me.
Oh, don't you hate it when that happens?
I do. Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, this thing was, it was almost exactly like the Lost in Spaceship. It was you know, round and kind of big. I mean, it was close up to us, and there were multicolored lights about a third of the circumference of this disc. And it hovered over us for maybe 11 seconds and then jolted like quickly to the left and then quickly to like the southwest and then darted off. And we just, well, needless to say, it stopped our argument. but a couple of years later, we saw one, and it was a cloud in the sky. And it was the kind of day where the clouds were moving along. But this one cloud stayed still, and even other clouds were penetrating through it. And even though we were rather young at the time, still, it was, I think we were 13, you know, it was over a buddy's house in the same neighborhood. And it really, it for about 3 hours, just hovered there.
Wow.
And then, like, we all, I don't know, got distracted, and we turned, and the thing was gone. And I'm thinking, you know, if you talk abduction cases or things like that where other neighbors don't see this thing a lot of times. And, you know, maybe if they're hovering in some sort of cloud type of thing, you know, then maybe they could get away with a lot of stuff that way.
How about that? Well, yeah. I want to remind everyone who's listening live, you can jump over to podcastufo.com. Right on the right-hand side, there's a chat room. You can jump in there and you can ask our guests a question. It's real easy to sign up. So, Chip, so how did that – did you talk about it with your friends a lot after that happened?
Yeah, we did, you know. And, look, it's at a time where, I mean, you just didn't talk about that stuff. So it was – I mean, the first sighting with my best buddy and I, yeah, we talked about that one a lot. We thought it was cool, you know, because it tied into Lost in Space, and it was like our favorite show at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was a big, huge show.
It was.
In its day. You know, it's like everybody at school talked about it, you know, the next day. It was that sort of thing. But we didn't really talk about it with other people that much. We mentioned it to our parents, and our parents each encouraged us to kind of keep it quiet because that's the type of thing that might give you a freak label or get you ostracized, just like a paranormal experience, you know.
Yep.
In that day and age, you just didn't mention it. So we kind of kept mum on it. But for me, when other people talk about sightings, you know, there's still, even in this day and age where everything seems out there on the internet, and even the news has to be a little TMI now, you know, it still comes with some risk when you talk about sightings or abductions or experiences or anything of that nature. And so I tend to take it at face value if somebody comes out and says something. You know, because I'm dealing with people that go to haunted houses and see apparitions for a living, you know. And there's a lot of similarities in some of the, I don't know, I kind of pay attention to some of the quantum physics because there's some potential explanations. I don't think we're quite there yet, but maybe in 50 years or so, you know, things will get clearer. And the physics that we're learning at CERN in Geneva, the way particles go about, and maybe wormholes and multiple universes and stuff like that, you know, everything will make a lot more sense. But, yeah, I'm a believer.
But I'll tell you what, it makes no – some of quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and you make absolutely no sense.
Well, that's – you know, but what kills me about it is, look – and especially as either a ghost or a UFO or ET guy, you look at electricity. Nobody really knows how it works. They just know that it works. It's something, it's an energy they can't see. Microwaves, radio signals, you know, infrared light. These are all things that we can't see, but we're perfectly acceptable of, and especially science. And it just seems that, you know, science right now thinks it's got its bearings, you know. I mean, in the 1500s, they thought they knew everything when the world was flat.
Right.
You know. So, I mean, it just seems in each day and age, we think that the physics that we have or the science that we have is the end-all, know-all. You know, and these guys are talking about spooky action at a distance, but they won't entertain ghosts. That kills me a little bit. Well, I actually am starting to believe that it's possible that apparitions or ghosts could actually be living people in a time warp, because our physics is starting to go there. I like now they're talking about this multiverse theory. If our universe is infinite, then just by definition, there has to be an infinite amount of universes parallel to ours. And these travelers could possibly come from completely different universes through wormholes. And what they say about these multiverses, you know, each potential universe has its own space and time. So a universe parallel to ours could be us 10 years ago. You know, or 100 years ago. And maybe sometimes those things meld and we see people from the 1890s, you know, or the 1960s telling us to get out of their house. I think some of these extraterrestrial sightings could also be that. I mean, it's some of that stuff makes sense because of the black holes. I look, I'm an Einstein guy. I like what he said and what he did. Some of this wormhole thing, I mean, opening stargates is a very likely possible thing. But the people that report the extraterrestrial sightings, and I especially pay attention to experiencers, those who have had either benign or positive sightings, because I'm a good guy and I like positive things. So I pay attention to them. But also with abductees, and every case seems similar in that they're communicating with us telepathically. And, you know, I work with a lot of psychics. Psychics use this thing in their brain called the pineal gland. It's like the third eye, you know, in meditation and things like that. It opens them up. And there's some conspiracy theories, interestingly enough, that seem to kind of kill that theory. I like to think that if we can better use our pineal glands, it says that there's fluoride in the water, these conspiracy theories, by the way. Sorry, I drifted there for a moment. TV, early television, is all designed to kill our pineal gland so we're more determined to follow others and not be individuals, but be part of a group, you know. So it's kind of interesting to note that and some of these extraterrestrials, especially the most positive ones, are these light beings. They don't even need their own bodies to travel. They can do it with their minds and use their minds to communicate. And these grays that the abductees talk about, they function like a group of insects almost, you know. There seems to be a queen bee, and there's drones and there's workers. They're non-emotional. They're doing their job. It's like the way we would treat monkeys in a science lab. It's kind of the same thing. And, you know, look, if we're going to grow to be as advanced as these extraterrestrials seemingly, then we would have to maybe 100, 200, 300 years from now be even more superior. And they're saying that our heads will get bigger and our eyes could get bigger. These could be us from the future, you know, recreating their own great, 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 great grandchildren. I mean, we don't know that.
Yeah, I think I've actually said that before, only because I was listening to a scientist talk about, you know, the difference in a billion years from now is like a difference from a billion years in the past, that we will be unrecognizable. You know, I mean, if evolution, you know, moves forward, it's just natural science that we will be completely what we're not. If we actually survive, that is.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't look likely. And look, I saw this show the other night about the end of days. And yeah, you, look, from ancient times, so, you know, you've got Hopi Indians and all these, the Egyptians and you know, all these ancient societies that all had kind of their end of days thing. And it's very similar to, you know, the Bible, and then the New Testament and the Quran. Each have their own version. But in each version, they're the good guys who are alive at the end. And for everybody to come together as a society, that's the Antichrist. So that can't happen, because whoever makes that happen is the ultimate evil. So it's really set up to, for us not to survive as a society. And in order to do that, once we genetically create, and I hate to say that, because, Martin, I mean, we could be the last real human beings in existence for all we know. We don't know if they've really cloned us yet or what they're doing with that technology, which they do have. And look, it's banned in this country, but not around the world. So they could already be a better, stronger, smarter us that they're working on. And once they do that, the best way to survive as a new society and a superior society is to function like insects, like bees, like ants, where they function as one brain, you know. And there's no good or evil in any of these encounters. And I don't know, you probably have heard differently, but in all the people that I've talked to, both with abductee and experiencer type of, you know, encounters, they seem to think that there is no good and evil in any of these beings. You know, they're either here to help us or here to hurt us, but it's not like personal, or there's no supreme being, and if there is, it's a queen bee type of thing. You know, but there's no good and evil in the extraterrestrial community, seemingly, just like there's no good and evil in the animal kingdom. Well, there's no good and evil in the universe with planets and stars, you know.
So what do you think about the singularity theory? Are you familiar with that?
Remind me, please.
Well, it's basically where man and machine kind of emerge.
Oh, man. No, I hope that doesn't happen. That can't go well. It just simply can't go well. And look, I saw today they have a Mercedes that drives itself.
Oh, and, yeah. You know, well, they've had an Audi and BMW drive themselves. Actually, they had a car go with a driver in it, but from coast to coast. I think it had something to do with something Google was doing. Completely untouched, you know, by human hands. Just it went on its own, really.
Oh, yeah.
There was a driver inside just in case.
Legally. Just in case. But that scares the heck out of me. And I saw a cartoon of all things called WALL-E, and it was a futuristic type of thing where robots cleaned up our garbage. And we couldn't even walk because we're in these flying machines with computers, just, you know, glued to our computers and our phones, because we didn't have to. There was nothing for us to do. Everything's automated. So there's no need for us to work. And we just became this kind of narcissistic waste of a pleasure-seeking society. And look, I'm a pleasure seeker, so I don't want to give that a bad rep, you know. But that scared the daylights out of me, because that's closer to truth than any movie that I've seen about the future, you know. And when a cartoon kind of outdoes, yes, a good science fiction, that's some scary stuff, you know. I like what Stephen Hawking thinks. You know, either singularity or trying to reach out to other societies. I have a little difficulty with that one, because I think there are some good ones out there. Just by probability alone, there has to be some, you know.
Well, one of the things he says that I never really liked is, like, only kooks and nuts, you know, see UFOs. You know, that part's not so good.
But yeah, I like that, though. I'll happily be a kook and nut in that case, you know. You got to wear it with some pride, I think, because, look, you have to think outside of the box.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you were talking about abductees, because I actually have a friend that she might even be listening tonight. She listens to every show, and she is studying right now. She had a major sighting, or a couple of them, when she was young. And we were actually born on the very same day, on the very same hour,
wow,
in the very same city, Boston.
That's cool. And you both are in the very same line of work, kind of.
Yeah, she found me on Facebook and, you know, listened to the show. And saw my birth date, and then we started talking. It was like, where were you born? Boston. Where were you born? Boston.
Oh,
what
so
time
cool.
were you born? 9:30. I was born at 9. So bizarre. But anyway, she is right now studying to be a hypnotherapist and and wants to get involved with the abductees. Now, I want to talk to you first of all, going back to your childhood. I just want to know where you grew up.
Oh, I grew up in near Albany, New York. It's a suburb of Albany. It's the capital of the Empire State. It's kind of midway between New York City and Montreal, kind of dead center between them, and a very dull community, really, because we're the political capital, you know. So politicians get in trouble, and none of us can act that way ever again. So kind of a dull place. But, yeah, but at least we had a couple of UFO sightings.
Someone wants to know on the board, and it may even be the person I'm talking about here.
Is, oh, nice.
She wants to know how many hypnotherapy sessions do you do with a client?
Well, it really depends because there are different focuses. My main focuses were past life regression, and some of that is kind of similar to the techniques they use when they talk to abductees. Look, there's weight loss and smoking cessation and pain management or feeling better about your job performance or confidence and things of that nature. But when you're talking to an abductee. And I want to kind of keep it, at least for the listener's sake and for your friend's sake, which I think is so cool, by the way. I've seen it on documentaries, you know. There's these guys that the experience was so traumatic that they blocked it out.
Right.
And that kind of hysterical, dissociative, it's a neurotic reaction, actually. It's in the DSM, it's a psychiatric manual. As a disorder. So it's very, you have to be kind of tender in bringing these things back in. But a lot of non-believers watching will say, well, it's a very suggestive process. So, of course, they're going to make up a story because you tell them to make a story up. And here's the thing, especially for your friend that's listening. You really have to watch your language so you don't have them create a memory. You have to keep the language very plain as you bring them under. And look, hypnosis is not this spooky thing. I mean, if you drive from Boston to New York City, Martin, and you know, 3 hours go by and you go, wow, that was quick. It was like I wasn't even thinking, and all of a sudden I'm here. Well, you've been in a hypnotic state. Most of the things that we do, we're doing with our subconscious mind, tying our shoes, using silverware when we eat. These are all things that we learned at a young age, and now they're kind of, we do it automatically. So that's a subconscious process. Really, our subconscious mind is in charge 95% of the time. And it's this supercomputer, basically, that keeps track of all of our senses. Everything we've ever seen, smelled, felt, tasted, or touched is in this supercomputer. But this supercomputer has the emotional inability of maybe a 2-year-old child. And it's being safeguarded by this judgment, belief, things that you really grew up taught, to believe or not to believe. You know, we might have religion that tells us we can't think about certain things because that's evil and you can't get involved in them. We have friends and neighbors that say the same thing. So, you know, really your own experience, anything that you experience comes from all this stuff. And all that stuff is blocking the supercomputer, even though it's used 95% of the time. So you have to use some very ginger and special ways to get through that cloud of judgment and belief and relax your patient into kind of a very relaxed state. And there are some people who believe, well, you'll never hypnotize me because I'm always thinking. So you have them do a mathematical problem in their head while you're feeding them this calm information. It's all about relaxation. I mean, really, that's it. You get them to relax, and you can focus on reprogramming that supercomputer. So you'll allow it to not want to have a cigarette or not want to eat so much or to go back to a previous life. And the thing is, and I'll tell you, I thought that was the biggest bunk in the world, past life regression hypnosis. I thought it was the dumbest thing I ever heard back when I was in college. You know, but over the years, and as I learned what it's really about, it's actually kind of a cathartic process, you know, because you can answer questions that have been puzzling you all your life. So it kind of fills holes, you know. And I don't want to get into it too much, but all I can say is once I learned the process, it doesn't matter if they've actually had this former life. Personally, I do believe in it from what I've worked with spirit mediums and, you know, psychics and even paranormal investigators. You know, there is something to that, and it is very possible. And that kind of goes into the ghost versus UFO thing that we'll talk about in a little while. But here, when you see somebody on a documentary getting somebody who's been an abductee, who's blocked it out traumatically, it's a very ginger thing, you know. In the hypnosis community, especially in hypnotherapy, it's very dangerous to work with people who have been diagnosed as bipolar or psychotic. Nothing against my bipolar and psychotic friends. You know, hey, everybody's got some good sides to them. You know, that's my thing. But a lot of people see this and say, well, you know, it's a suggestive thing, and of course they're creating it. But no, because these hypnotherapists that have worked on these abductees to get these traumatic things out, it's a very specialized and ginger process. And the people that are studying hypnotherapy have to learn a lot of psychology and even psychiatry, you know, and some of even the basic things, so you know where the boundaries are. And you can even use a subliminal thing, you say you are going deeper, you can hide it in sentences, you know. You are thinking about a coffee cup. And you are looking at that coffee cup. And as you think about that, you go deeper. So those four accentuated words that you are going deeper are kind of supplanted in your method. There's so much to this that I really have to kind of defend the process. And I actually think not only is it actually happening, and these people are really... They're not making this stuff up because they're told to. We have to watch that language very carefully. We have to make sure that we keep them from suggestibility, but allow them to feel relaxed about some of the things that have been haunting them. Kind of like the past life regression hypnosis, it's a very cathartic type of thing. And even though you see the guys in some of these documentaries, they're crying and they're meeting kids with grays and, you know, and they're remembering being stabbed and hurt and, you know, all these things while with these non-emotive beings, you know, working on their reproductive system for you without their permission and stealing them from their homes. I mean, you know, I would love to meet an extraterrestrial someday. I think it would be an honor, but I don't think I'd like to be prodded, you know, like some of these people or you know, just abducted without permission. So if you assume that it's true and it has happened to these people, and again, we're talking about if they come out, you know, to anybody, friends, neighbors, you know, who are they going to tell? Cops, you know, their pastors or priests or whatever. I mean, they're going to take some flack, and their authority in society is going to be clouded by that. So it's kind of a thing where you can't win or lose, you know, for losing.
Chip, a couple of things. First of all,
sure.
Thanks for all that explanation. And I have to say, you know, I'm not afraid to say this, and I've never said it on the show or anything, but, you know, I did go to therapy. I did not have the best of childhood, so I went to therapy for a good a good while, and I know that I was led astray by that therapist. You know,
oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, look, well that's okay. I went to someone.
I was big on psychology, but I'm not big on the practice. I think no, yeah. Seriously, and I'm not afraid to say it. Look, I worked in a nonprofit teaching computer skills and vocational skills to schizophrenics. You know, and there is such a stigma against schizophrenics. Again, they can't win for losing. And in the most primitive tribal societies, if somebody has a psychotic thing, you know, a psychotic break, the entire community comes together. And none of the behaviors are addressed or blamed on the person. It's an evil spirit. So the entire community comes together with a medicine man or shaman in very nurturing factor. You know, the support and nurturing is there. And they can eliminate this behavior and drive that evil spirit out in a matter of weeks or days. So they've basically cured a psychotic illness in less than a month. Here in this society, with the way we treat it, where if you think there's something drugs. Wrong with you, you have to go to somebody smarter than you to say, oh, yeah, you're screwed up. How are you going to come out of that? You know, our psychotic disorders have an average cure ratio of 27 years, brother, because the way that therapy works or doesn't work.
Well, I wasn't saying that.
I just
thought I'd chime in, you know, because you're a long-winded guy. And, you know,
sorry.
No, that's good, because whenever I need you back again and I need to fill some time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just teasing you, man. But no,
you
can
just say, Chip, how you doing? And you've got 3 hours, you know.
But no, I didn't want to leave me, you know, hanging when I just said that remark. I also wanted to say that I ended up going to someone that corrected all the time I lost and everything. So it ended up being a really good thing. But I didn't recognize what I was going to get at. And my point is, I wasn't recognizing that this was happening, that I was being led down a wrong path, and I started believing things that never really happened to me and all that.
It's easier than believing the truth. The truth is tough. Nobody wants to hear the
truth. Yeah.
But
the bottom line is, I wonder, that must happen if someone is not really on the mark with hypnotherapy. And let me just ask you this. I think that it's very possible that some people that use hypnotherapy on abductees possibly do lead them. I'm not saying that nearly all of them or something, but I'm saying that some of them, I'm sure, do, because it's just kind of human nature. If you're not.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, for the sake of the documentaries that I've seen, look, there's some good documentaries out there now. I mean, really good. Pretty much from 2008 up, they've been next level. And you watch some of them, and you go, oh, my God, you know, what kind of world do I live in? I mean, I absolutely believe, I think 100% of the people in this country believe that their government has lied to them one way or another. Even though statistics say about 70%, I think it's 100%. You know, so you just really never know.
Yeah.
But in a situation like that, admittedly, look, it's a crapshoot, you know. But I think that we're all born with instinct, even if we come in to where we are now a little broken. You know, look, everybody's broken in one way or another. Everybody's been traumatized or hurt or feels inferior. And the reality is that we all want to be respected, you know, heard, believed, you know, and this is, it's just not set up for that to happen.
Right.
But I think that we all, if we really think about it, do have this thing called the sixth sense. It's really a gut feeling. You kind of know when you're walking into trouble before it happens. I think anybody listening could agree with that.
Now, Chip, I just got to warn you, you know, I have to cut in here because we have like 20 minutes left. And
I know, right?
We have like something really important to talk about.
Yes, we do.
So I'm sorry. I just want to change the course a little bit.
You kind of have to with me, but that's okay.
Well, no, that was all very fascinating. I'm not really sure what I think about past lives. And I know last time I said that on the show, I got some email. I actually got an email from a scientist that supports a show and saying, you know, that he actually believed in it. And I thought that was really amazing.
Wow.
I'm not really sure. I'm on the fence about that. But also, the person I was talking about earlier that's going through hypnotherapy is doing some work on that as well. So I'm going to be talking to her about that.
Yeah, good for her. I think it's cool that she listens to the podcast. I think it's cool that you were born at the same time in the same area. I mean, you know, how many of us can find somebody like that, especially with such similar interests? It's almost like a twin connection of sorts.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. There's a message up on the message board that they just want to clarify this before we move on to the next subject. I'm sorry I'm getting a little pushy here, but I don't want to run out of time. Do you think that all mental illness is caused by evil spirits?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
I just wanted to clarify that.
No, I'm just saying that in primitive society, what the societies that we think of as primitive, you know, they can actually cure a psychotic illness in a series of months, where here it takes, decades. And it's because they don't treat the behavior of the person as wrong. They don't treat the person as broken.
Right.
They think that there is something beside the person that causes that. And the belief system helps that unconscious mind, subconscious mind, say, you know what, they're right, I'm wrong. And the behavior stops. I just think it's kind of miraculous, and it should be a lesson to the way we treat our mentally ill. That's all I have to say about it.
Right. Okay, so let's move on. And this is a pretty exciting topic because, and I'll just paraphrase what we had said before, and that is, which is going to get the proof first, UFOs or ghosts? And I don't know how you came up with that topic, but I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Well, I've been doing articles for a magazine called Supernatural Magazine, and it's going to be my next article. So I've been working on it. And look, I'm primarily a ghost guy, but I pay a lot of attention to the UFO community because as a responsible radio host, you know, you have to get into these things. Yeah, as an astronomy guy, and now I know everything about astronomy. You know, look, jack of all trades, master of most of them. Because I just have the time and effort to do that sort of thing. And look, you go to paranormal conventions, you go to UFO conventions, and it's always kind of on the table, you know. Which do you think is going to get proven first, ghosts or UFOs? And the ghost people will say, oh, ghosts, you know, because we're in there trying to look for them, and we know what we're doing, and we'll figure it out, which I, even though I'm with them, don't believe. And the ufologists, and I actually believe that the answer is pretty clear, and I think it's easy, and I do think it's UFOs. And look, but you have to think of the ramifications of each, and I'll speak to ghosts first. We do have a couple of minutes to work on that. There are a lot of different things a ghost could be, and there's a lot of different ghostly type of things. And look, I've worked with spirit mediums. I was actually attuned as one for about 7 years. That's a story for another show.
No. I just want to know what is attuned to one means.
Oh, I spoke to dead people for a while. I asked them some very detailed questions. And look, you know, it is what it is. I lost a lot of friends, so I let it go. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, 7 years later.
Dead?
No, I'm a radio guy representing spirit mediums and ghost hunters, you know. So I can't get it back. I just can't, you know, and it's kind of it's a sad thing. But I ask very detailed questions when I did have that ability. And look, you know, you can believe it or not. You know, these are things that I experienced. And look, ghosts is a different kind of energy. I don't like the practice. I think they're doing it kind of wrong. Because for somebody to be in a house, maybe at a different time or a secondary dimension or a ghost, and have trespassers come in on your property, you know, that you built with your blood, sweat, and tears, and call you evil or think that you're going to push them down a flight of stairs, well, what would you do? I'd push them down a flight of stairs. You know, these people are coming into my house with all this equipment that I'd never seen before. They're like aliens, you know. I'd want to get them out of there if I was from 1890 or 1950. So you think of them with respect. You talk to them in the language and the culture of the time period where you think they originated. You do research on the property, think who could be there, and try to communicate with them. That's a communicating with an interdimensional being. It's very similar to extraterrestrial. I don't really see that much difference between the two, because if you can communicate successfully and in a respectful and nurturing manner, you know, that's the dream. And look, I don't want to prove ghosts, but I will say this. In order to prove the existence of ghosts, you kind of have to tell every religious community that they're wrong, because it basically says that it doesn't matter what you do, how you behave in life. You will still go on, and you will be with like-minded people wherever you go, and you will be taught, and you will have multiple lifetimes to learn all the lessons in life. Look, the way we look at time, you know, the past is behind us, the future is not yet here. So everything's moments. And we're so time conscious that the moments are urgent. We have to know the emotional things now. Well, you know, we have to have answers now. So if we're trying to talk with people who might have died, then we think of them in our living state with all this urgency. And if they're dead, they don't, their hearts aren't beating anymore, and things are really relaxed for them. So the grudges don't count anymore. All they really want is people they're connected with, and they want to watch over them. It's kind of a guardian angel thing. They don't have supernatural abilities, and they're not automatically psychic just because they're dead. And they really haven't changed all that much from when they were alive. So if they're a little grumpy when they're alive, they'll be a little grumpy when they're dead, you know? If they're really nice when alive, they'll be really nice when they're dead. If they were a serial killer when alive, then, well, they can't kill you. They can't really harm you. But the whole thing is, in order to prove the belief of ghosts, you have to pretty much wipe away all the faith in the world, because all the faith in the world is saying, no, our guy says, you know, he's the only one that, you know, died and came back, and we can't do that, and we can't talk to people who did that, and, you know, that's just wrong, that's just evil, and it's not happening, and, you know, we have to live on our own lives and watch our sinful behaviors and our good behaviors and yada, yada. On the other hand, with UFOs now, if you think of it, we've had a Canadian Minister of Defense who spoke in Parliament saying that he was personally aware that the major governments of the world since the mid-1940s or so, really when we started working with or thinking about working on nuclear armaments, you know, we had the Roswell thing. And basically since then, they've been in league with our major governments. We're swapping technology and letting them play with our people. Because we don't care about our people. We care about technology. We want anti-gravity first, you know. We want stealth first. These things. We want interstellar travel, you know. We want that kind of technology. So they're kind of drawing us along. This guy says there's like 20 different species that he's personally, you know, familiar with. Then you got a guy recently, about a month ago, 2 months ago, well, maybe longer, on his deathbed, he confessed. He worked in Area 51. He was this aeronautical engineer at Lockheed Martin,
right,
and other places, and said it was more like 27 different species. Some he actually worked with that were like 250 years of age or older, and some are going to be good to us. Some don't care about us. You know, they are who they are. But we're in league with them. And to have these kinds of things being told to us and to see these stories on the internet daily about, you know, you look at the Mars thing, and look, we talked about the scientific aspects of that today. But you see, oh, there's a statue there and there's a coffin there. And, you know, here's evidence that there were species there. And, you know, most of these are either photographic anomalies or somebody's imagination. You know, we look at stuff, we make patterns out of them. That's what our brains do.
That's right.
But if you're going to prepare the people for disclosure, that's the way you do it. So it may be in full swing already. And by the time they come out with it, say 10 years even from now, most of us will be used to the idea, because we're in this interweb, you know, and everybody knows everything now. You can't hide anything from anybody, which really kind of stinks for the news. I can't watch the news anymore. They have to go TMI on us, you know. They have to show too much information, because if they don't, people will find it on the internet, and that's what they're competing with. So it makes the news really hard to watch.
Yeah, that's right. Chip, just to interrupt you a little bit.
Sure.
And I'll probably have to do that when I close out. Someone on the chat room wants to know what type of coffee you drink. But
actually, Red Bull.
Okay,
know.
Red Bull. Okay.
Yeah.
I might have to take that before my next show. But, you know, a couple of things you just said, I just wanted to just talk about quickly.
Sure.
And that is, first of all, Paul Hellyer. He and I communicate.
I like that
and,
guy.
And he has many times slated for the show and just has not made it. And hopefully he'll be on sooner or later. It's a little bit controversial what he has said. This is just in ufology in general. Mm-hmm. A little bit controversial, the things that he said. I would let him speak anyway and say his piece. And also about the deathbed confession. There's controversy about that, too. There's, you know, as you know, as I know, nothing is really 100% clear on
Sure.
type of things. You know, I mean...
Yeah.
Interesting story, but there was some. There's been a little backlash about both of those people, especially Paul Hellyer, and which you know, very prestigious. He had a very prestigious position with the government.
Oh yeah,
he was very, very well connected. He's a nice gentleman. He's sharp. He's very sharp for 90 years old. I believe that's what he is. But.
Wow.
But he has definitely, without a doubt, made some far reaches and some assumptions. You know, it's very.
But he's an interesting guy, and look, he's authoritative. But even for me in my mid-50s, he's a little old school. You know, and and look, you have to look. I don't get along with, you know, all the 20-year-old kids out there, but I have to get along with some. I have a daughter that age, you know, and I'm keeping my eye on her, so I have to learn her community in order to do that. We've been the cool parents in the neighborhood, you know, but you also have to pay attention, and they're very different than, you know, people at my age group is, and so there's some distance between what we will accept and not accept. And even me is a bit liberal, you know, for that level. But, you know, somebody at Paul's age, and look, I'm not saying anything against him because, look, he's one of my heroes, truly. But I have to say, in this internet day and age, you know, everything you have to take with a grain of salt. And I have read some articles that are disparaging with regard to the Canadian Prime Minister, or the Minister of Defense, rather, and the guy's deathbed confession. But the news organizations that brought these stories out are the things that I pay attention to. And look, some have a lot of kind of wishy-washy stuff where, you know, they're really trying to sell, you know, blogs or magazines or whatever. And some have been authoritative figures and wouldn't really publish this stuff unless they felt good about it. And you see the kind of news organizations that carry those stories, and that's why I tend to believe them, especially when some of the documents I've seen with experiencers and abductees or people that have been in classified government organizations that are coming out now, you know, there's a lot of risk in doing that. So,
oh, absolutely.
Look,
it really depends. You know, we're just about out of time, Chip. How can someone find you?
Oh, it's kind of hard to do, unfortunately, at the moment. I'm on Facebook at Chip Reichenthal, and Chip, you know, like potato chip or computer chip, it's Chip. And Reichenthal is like the Third Reich, which I hate to say, R-E-I-C-H, and then E-N-T-H-A-L. Actually, there's good information about me on the podcast page. So they can find me, or at least my book, through the podcast page. I'm on LinkedIn, Chip Reichenthal, Facebook. I'm on Twitter, Victims of Retail, actually, but my old band name. I'm changing all of that in a couple of months. I'm starting a website, and it'll be easier to find me. But meantime, that's probably the best way. And you can email me if you want, victimsofretail@yahoo.com. That's my band name. Victims is plural, victims of retail. We all are. You know, it's kind of my collective harmony type of thing.
I guess we are, yeah. So this has been a lot of fun. And I had just one more thing. Are you planning to write another book at any point?
Oh, a couple of books. And a couple of the next one is actually a sequel to my current book. But I'm adding some UFOs to it. very interesting. And the first book was really about the spirit medium and handling a murder mystery. And the sequel has him having to chase a ghost who convinced this guy who was alleged to be mentally, let's say, deranged. It was his brother who suicided, and the spirit of his brother told him to kill a police officer who was the partner of the homicide investigator who was the main character in my first book.
Okay, you lost me at UFO.
I know.
And by the way, can you make that UFO in the book donut-shaped one like Maury Island?
Anything for you, brother. Yeah, yeah, it would be an honor. And I'll also name you, you know, in the acknowledgments.
It says on the side of the ship. Marty.
Yeah. Marty. I like that.
Yeah. Hey, well, hey, Chip, thanks so much. And we'll have you back. You're a good guy, a friend, and I'd love to have you back on sometime.
It's always a pleasure and an honor, brother. I love talking with you. Thank you so much.
So Rob Mercer will be back for hour two of the show. And if you want to listen to that, you have to become a supporter, only $1 a month or more at getjoyride.com. All you have to do is go to the website, podcastufo.com, and look at the sidebar. There's all that information right there. And we even have a frequently asked questions page or something like that on the website on how to do that. So that's it for the show. And I want to thank everyone for helping out today. First of all, Chip, I want to thank him for helping out with the news. And as a guest, Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music. And Peggy Channing for managing our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. Terry Ray, author of The Complete Story of the World of Worldwide Invasion of Orbs. He'll be on next week. And you can check us out live next week and listen to the whole show for free on the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky, and we'll see you.